Welcome into the second hour of the 9 till noon show. Thanks for all your comments. I'll run through some of them now. We'll stick with energy. Why are we talking about erecting more wind farms when EirGrid are telling the existing ones to stop producing to the tune of 1 million per day while they still get paid? Is this a plan to keep the cost of electricity high, encourage more outside investors to come in and rip us off? Well, EirGrid would be responsible for the infrastructure, which I think really you've quite rightly pointed out there. They don't charge us electricity per se. Refreshing to hear a politician talk common sense for once. It seems N2 is the party Sinn Féin should have been before they deserted their core support in favour of woke ideology. If Ireland's wind energy and renewable energy is so good, which the whole basis of our last conversation was that it wasn't so good, why is RTE scaremongering the public by saying that Russia is going to cut the wire under the sea that's supplying Ireland with electricity? Yes, RTE have recently published a TV segment saying the ESB is getting ready for this inevitability. Well, firstly, the whole conversation, as I just mentioned, is based on the fact that Ireland's wind and renewable energy is not in a good spot. We can't actually even avail of the generation that comes from it to the tune of 1.3 million a day, by the way. That's a day. Also, plans are afoot for another interconnector to Spain. Spain, of course, has a lot of renewable energy, and we're going to be taking and paying for some of that. So our independence, our energy independence is just not there. Michael White, the companies are paid to turn off the turbines in high winds. 8% of our electricity bills are these curtailment payments, which is millions every month. 16% of Ireland is peat bogs, and 60% of the turbines in Ireland are on peat bogs. It's not sustainable. Please stop insulting listeners with the untruths being perpetrated on the show today. Social media now. The government needs to learn who has the power in the relationship with business and start seizing assets. We hold most of their bank accounts and IPs. We seize that and suddenly they behave. But shocker, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael don't use the opportunity. A caller says, I know young ones on Facebook and they put in the wrong date of birth, year, and it works. They're only young people. Yep, that of course happens all of the time, but the restrictions in Australia, you can't circumvent them that easily. Hi, Greg. Can you ask your panel about the massive wages the Electric Ireland workers earn? Okay, well, your view on that is as important as the panel's. Let me see. On the issue of the US, refreshing to hear a politician talk common sense. I read that on one already. What about the right to speak out against transgenderism in this country without being criminalised? You can do so. You just have. And I don't think anyone's coming to your door. You're opposed to it. You're speaking against it. And you're free to do so. You've just done so. President Trump is not welcome in New York City. He shafted a lot of construction companies there. New York has a new Democrat socials mayor now. He beats all the billionaires and win, and he's an immigrant too. Another, the US is co-hosting the 2026 FIFA World Cup. Are they prepared for the backlash when millions of international football fans suddenly have to submit to a social media review to watch a game? This could be very detrimental to international businesses and tourism, or people intending to go over there start taking anything negative against US interests down from their social media. Maybe that's what it's all about. Purges don't save you. A US citizen was arrested for destroying evidence for purging his Instagram before going through an airport. That would be a very limited case, and there have to have been evidence there previously. I don't think they're actually going to go to the and seek a warrant to go to for individuals that are going there on holidays to go to get a warrant and seek sort of the history like that. But anyway, 5 years of your social media. That's not a security check, says a listener. That's a digital deep dive into your private life. Another, is this really about security, or is it a massive government fishing expedition that will lead to people self-censoring or deleting their accounts? Another, this is all about Israel and nothing else. Lots of you texting in on this. Social media, it's not at all difficult to moderate. You just need to stop being an incurious moron and learn how things work. Yes, but I mean, there are things that happen in the world and, you know, you want to have a comment on them. And for some, that's their voice, right? You know, not everyone has a newspaper column. Not everyone has a radio show. Social media is an opportunity for people to have their say, maybe to influence discourse. And arguably, that's been taken away from them if they intend to go to America. So it's not insignificant either. A caller says the motivation is the Heritage Foundation want Europe destroyed. This is to align with the security strategy where they declared EU countries' coalition governments as illegitimate. In the US, how do they account for sarcasm, cultural context, or a simple inside joke? An algorithm doesn't understand irony. This is a policy that could easily deny entry to an innocent person based on a misinterpreted meme. Well, you know, when you think about it, although they did have a little bit of a falling out, Donald Trump and Elon Musk would be really good friends. And is this why Elon Musk introduced the parody account? So in other words, you know, that could be the only space where you could. But also too, what we've seen happening, ironically, some might see, is that the right had been wanting to suppress, as many would see, suppress certain points of view. And now it is the left, the extreme left. And it comes back to this political horseshoe that really, really people with extreme views can end up being really very much the same as people with extreme views on the other side. Because certainly recently, the only calls I've seen on social media for censorship, not exclusively, but in the majority, have come from what you might describe as liberals or conservatives. And liberals as well. Liberals don't want people to be able to express views on transgenderism, was mentioned a little earlier on. Children are being used by government to introduce digital ID, and you will have to have a MyGov ID to get online. Censorship is already rife in Ireland, with issues like defective concrete not making the national media. Free speech is the cornerstone of democracy, but digital IDs will mean increased censorship. But what cost our children? We cannot deny that children are being bullied, targeted, groomed, abused online. So that is a problem. How do you deal with that problem without mygov.ie? And we can't say parenting, guardianship. That doesn't work like that because, you know, if you made alcohol freely available to under 18s, of course the parental responsibility would still be there, but there would be a massive amount of young people of all ages intoxicated quite regularly, right? So you do need checks and balances. So what price your freedom not to provide ID, you know? Take contact away from children with the parents when they're out. Good job enabling the pervert kidnappers patter. Some thinking of the children there. Studies have concluded that the correlation of the rise of social media has nothing to do with depression. Depression is happening because the world's falling apart. Yeah, but I mean, phones, you can have a phone. Even now, you can set up your Android phone, and I presume it's the same with Apple, that doesn't have any of the apps that we've talked of, but you can still communicate either with voice, text, or video messaging with your parents or guardians or trusted friends, right? So you can set a phone up whereby their best friend, they can still message them. You know, you can really get into it. So it's very possible for you if you've got a child who's 15 or 14 and you don't want them to have general access, but how do you get around that? Well, set up an Android phone with parental controls and you can okay limited contacts, a small group of friends. And not give them access to the Wild Wild West. Social media and a massive rise in VPN use non-compliant websites to consider with that fall, Greg. That's a funny stat, ain't it? Almost as if it doesn't actually work. Well, it does work because, you know, there has been a dramatic fall in people accessing these websites. In terms of Australia, it's not just the location of where a service is being accessed. They're also considering and cross-referencing where the phone is registered and bought. So this is not one of these situations in Australia whereby you just put a VPN in. It's not that simple. They are aware of that. They're cracking down on that. In terms of, I mean, you have to be a really committed person in terms of adult material if you still want to access it but don't want to give your ID and then use a VPN. You know, sitting there, switch your VPN, then access Pornhub. It's a bit of a miserable life in your bedroom, that, isn't it? But anyway, if some people want to do that, that's up to them. Right, okay. On the issue of the Dáil, are you going to discuss CETA? The Dáil voted on it at 1 a.m. When we were all sleeping, and what surprise countries want out of Europe. And finally, didn't get around to this, but I know it's been brought up. Fox hunting. Could you please ask the panel on their views on the proposed fox hunting ban? I'm very interested in your views on that, by the way. You know, fox hunting is not an urban-rural thing. recent survey show that not as many, but the majority of people in rural areas don't want fox hunting. It has often been framed as a urban attack on rural a rural way of life, but I think it's something in the region of 65% of people in rural Ireland want fox hunting banned. It's higher in urban Ireland, I think around about 75%. And we still permit it. It's not permitted in many, many countries, but we still allow it. So I'll throw that out to you, the listener, the greatest panel of all. Any further views on what we've been talking about? And maybe you're for or against a ban on fox hunting. It's a conversation that comes round with regularity but never changes here, and that's why maybe I kind of was didn't really put my eye on it as much as I might, because when you've been sitting in this chair and others as long as I have, these conversations come and go. But I'm more than happy to talk about those things with you anytime. Memorials to crash victims on the side of many roads will be banned under new powers from the government. The policy advises local authorities that the installation of roadside memorials is not permitted on motorways, dual carriageways, and on roads with speed limits greater than 60 kilometres per hour. Local councils will be required to implement their own roadside memorial policy based on the recommendations from the Department of Transport. So, you know, I would say that the majority of road traffic collisions in this county perhaps would fall under the category of roads with speed limits greater than 60 kilometres per hour. And I mean, obviously, this could be a practice that we see less and less of going forward. I'm joined by three guests, very sadly, with personal experience of loss in this area on our roads, to get their views. And I really appreciate their time. I'll start with you, Michelle McKenna, mother of Jimmy McKenna, who very sadly lost his life in a road traffic collision. My understanding is that you have chose not to, or have yet to, erect a memorial, because it has to be at the right time, and we're all different, and it's really, really subjective. But Michelle, thanks for speaking again. Sorry for your awful loss. What's your feelings on this government move?
Good morning, Greg. I actually wasn't aware, Greg, of it until Carolyn contacted me this morning to talk about it. And then I'd done a wee quick search and I got the policy up and I had a wee quick read of it. Now, at the start, I was saying to Carolyn, I totally disagree with it. I think people's entitled to acknowledge their family member wherever they've been lost along the road. And I know myself personally, I haven't done that. I have had conversations about it, but I just haven't decided to do that yet. For us as a family, it's only 18 months down the road, and suppose we are at the stage that we still find it just surreal that has happened to us. So we don't like to visit that area, you know, and I'm lucky, I suppose, that I don't have to pass it on a daily basis. I was just thinking there, if I had to, I probably would make life even more tougher for me if I did. So I'm not at that stage yet, but I do know other parents very well in the Anishinaabe area that has erected those, and it's very important to them. They wanted to acknowledge the area that they lost their child, you know, or any family member like that they've lost. But looking at the policy, Greg, I'm kind of, I like the idea that the local authority are being kind of suggested to them that they could maybe set up a memorial garden and remember all those that have. So, like, say, for example, in Anishinaabe, that they would set up a memorial garden and everybody would have their own plaques there. And it would actually be a nice idea that you'd be able to just walk around, nice, peace, quiet, and whatever way they would have it, that we would remember everybody and you'd see everybody, which would probably be quite alarming when you'd see actually the amount of people that have lost their lives on our roads over the years.
And of course that would have to be reliant on families wanting to be a part of that as well. But I suppose if the option was there, we could find out. But Michelle, It's up to each individual, isn't it? And really the truth is, with these rules, if they are implemented, I think the road in which your son sadly passed on is in excess of 60 kilometres per hour. So it would mean that you couldn't, if they were fully adopted, erect a memorial.
Yeah, and you know, and it is a dangerous road because there's times and special occasions we would go down. Like, we don't go very often, but sometimes I send my mum or my sister to leave a bunch of flowers. And it is the twice I've been there, I've only been there twice. it is. You have to be very careful. You have to pull into the footpath, put on your hazard warning lights, get out, be very careful. You're not opening your door, cars passing. And you have to really, you know, really be mindful of where you're standing and the cars passing quite speedily. So, yes. But, you know, the other thing that took my mind this morning, I was just driving around, and was when I did pass a few. Every time I pass those memorials, I always bless myself and think about those people. So it's also there's that side of it. Like, you know, every time I pass one, no matter what part of the country I'm in, I would always bless myself and just remember God rest their soul. Like, you know, so it's an individual thing, really, Greg, really, what people want. But you have to be respectful, I suppose, to all people involved. Like, you know, whether it be, depending on what area it is, whether it be the council, maybe it's somebody's property, you know.
Well, why, Michelle, I'm trying to phrase this question. Obviously, you know, people would die suddenly in different spaces. You know, it could be even in hospitals and what have you. Yet we don't have a custom of erecting memorials there, even if it is a sudden unexpected death. I wonder why we have this. Well, I know for road traffic fatalities, if you understand where I'm coming from. Like, if someone were to fall from scaffolding, God forbid, in a workplace accident, we don't see, you know, we don't see necessarily memorials at that site. It seems almost specific to, well, fishing to some extent on piers and what have you, but certainly honouring or remembering people who died in road traffic collisions.
Yeah, that's a good question. I've actually never thought of that like that, you know, but... I don't know. Maybe it's just a thing that started and everybody kind of feels that they have to. Like, to me, at the minute, at this moment in my family, it's not important.
Yeah, it's too
at the
soon,
minute,
yeah.
Because we're still, we're, you know, it's just not
doesn't
something
feel real.
That, like, we have thought about it, we've talked about it, but it's just not something we've actually gone ahead and done. We just find that very hard, like, you know, but I do like the idea of a memorial garden.
Yeah, and it's not. But for some people, then they will see the graveyard as that. That is their okay. Julie Patton is with me as well. Julie very sadly lost Shane in 2012. He was hit by a driver who was under the influence of alcohol. Julie, Shane didn't die at the scene of the collision. He died later in hospital. Has that influenced your decision not to erect a memorial at the place of the collision, or what's your views on this, Julie?
Good morning, Greg. Yeah. Shane died the following afternoon in the hospital, so we made the decision that he didn't actually die on the roadside. So we decided not to erect a memorial. We did think about it at the very start. Families are vulnerable at that time, and it can help the grieving process, but we would pass the spot where the accident happened every day. So it was just easier for us to not have a memorial site at the side of the road.
Yeah, and that was a decision that you made, and this is the thing, right? Because in your grief, which still is, I would say, as raw as the day that you lost Shane, you've made your decision. These rules would sort of remove that choice for people. Maybe over time, you know, if you don't know that if it's not a normal practice, maybe it's just something we move away from doing. Or do you think families should retain the right still to erect a memorial if they see fit, Julie?
I think the family should be allowed to erect a memorial if they see fit, providing it is in a safe-like spot, because it does make people aware if they see a memorial on the side of the road, off the off-road safety, and I feel that, like as Michelle said there just before me, maybe a garden of memory, a memorial garden would be a benefit to families as well, instead of at the side of the road. And you brought up about families dying in hospital and different causes and that there, like they don't get memorial gardens or that there. So it's hard to know which is, like, the best thing to do. But yeah. I do think that maybe, like, memorials maybe should not be removed that has been already erected.
No, I agree with you, yeah.
Because the families have went to the bother. They were very vulnerable when they put them up. And it's their way of remembering their loved one.
Mm. The one
also,
thing we
like,
would...
you have signs on the road.
Yeah, yeah. The
like
slots.
Road signs.
Yeah.
All them sort of things, to me, should be maybe removed as well if they're going to remove memorials.
I think, certainly from... there's a couple of cases I would know of, and I'm trying to keep it incredibly general, but they would be in this region whereby there's been second road traffic collisions whilst... family were visiting the original memorial as well, which is certainly something that no one would want. So we would have to be careful. I'll bring Marie Fury into this conversation as well. Marie, as people might be familiar with, is a member of the Road Victims Support Northern Ireland Donegal and Bereavement Councillor as well, and very sadly lost her partner Jonathan in a collision in 2022. And Marie, your situation is somewhat different from Julie and Michelle's, because I understand you do have a memorial erected already to remember Jonathan.
Yes, we put up a memorial. It was a few months after, actually. I suppose that was our way of obviously remembering him, and as Johnny's mum says, that's the last place he took his breath.
Mm. And
so,
is it
but everybody's different.
Is it a space, Marie, that, you know, the family visit often? Do you know, like one might a grave, for an example?
Yeah, well, obviously for me, Johnny was from Monaghan, so I would have to travel an hour and a half to go to his grave.
Yeah.
So for me, if I'm having a bad day or... If I need to go somewhere like that, I would go up to his crash site, and even just drive past it. Like, I know his is on a road where we actually have, you pull into the grass verge, so you're off the road,
okay.
And you can't see. Like, we took in obviously road safety, because you don't want anybody like being distracted or whatever, and like ours is in off the road, and you can't, it's not distracting, or you can't see it until you come up to it, if you get my...
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because this is a blanket decision, but we have three ladies here, Michelle, who says that they haven't decided yet what they might do. Julie, the family have decided that, you know, Shane passed away in the hospital a little later on, and they've, and you, Marie, you factored into the fact at the time that you can erect this, and even though the road might be busy, you can get off the road and not be a threat to any other traffic. But I presume they're trying to get rules that sort of cover everybody, and that's the complication here, isn't it? You know, and some people might be disappointed if they can't erect a memorial, and others might, Marie, be able to.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important too, because as Julie said there as well, and that when you pass, like, a memorial, and Michelle said it too, that you bless yourself and you think, and... like, it makes people aware, and it makes other drivers aware as well of the dangers of the road, and your loved ones remembered.
Mm.
And I think that's when you put up a memorial, it's a raw expression of love and grief, you know, and it's placed exactly like where everything changed.
And
so,
Julie, going back to you for a moment as well, you see what the elephant in the room here for me is as well. Regardless of whether a memorial is placed or not, I'm not sure, 100% sure what the actual motivation of this is, Julie, but people in time, or when it suits them, or maybe never, will still visit the sites where their loved one potentially drew their last breath, Julie. Do you know what I mean? With or without a memorial.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that's true. Like, you're gravitated back towards that area where the accident happened. It just helps families, you know, sometimes to deal with, was there anything else could have happened? Could they have, you know, it's hard to know, like, which is the best, but I do feel that the family should be given the option if they want to.
Yeah, I think it really should be. There should be some consultation as well. And Michelle, finally, to you, reading on here, the rationale behind the ban is that roadside memorials raise safety risks due to increased pedestrian activity in hazardous locations, stopping, parking, and vehicle in manoeuvres. Again, Michelle, you know, when the time is right, whether there is a memorial there or not, you may well choose to visit the site. You know, whether there's a memorial there or not. So I'm not really sure it fixes the problem that they're trying to fix.
Yeah, well, for me personally, I don't feel like going near that place, you know. And I'm just lucky it's not on my journey every day when I'm driving the roads, like, you know. For me, it's just too raw, like, you know. But I also understand why people do it. And as I say, it's nice to acknowledge those people when you're driving along the road and you see them, their memorial, and you always think of them. So, and it's also makes people aware that, you know, not to be speeding or drink driving or whatever it may be, like, you know. But suppose I'm just too raw for me yet.
Yeah, I know, Michelle,
Greg,
I understand.
Really.
Yeah, but you're right. I know why, and anyone I travel with, you always bless yourself. As you pass. Marie Fury, thank you for your views on it. I appreciate it. And
Greg, just
yes,
one more thing.
Please.
Sorry.
No problem.
You were saying there, like, why people put up memorials for road traffic collisions and not, you know, it's not common for other deaths. But I think a big thing too would be it's a bit of a tradition or a cultural thing here.
Yeah,
in Ireland, that's just popped into my head.
That's true.
Like, it doesn't matter what road you go in Ireland, there's a cross or there's a memorial to mark the place of your loved one. So I think it would be a cultural thing as well.
Yeah, cultural norm, actually. That's a very good observation indeed. Julie Patton, thank you very much for your time. Michelle McKenna and Marie Fury, I really appreciate it, and we always be thinking on you, as you know that. Thank you very much for chatting to us.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Now, welcome back to the show. In with me, we've got Bernard Gallagher of CBM Science. Bernard, how are you getting on?
Thanks, Greg. I'm getting on good. Thank
it's
you
good to have you with, in, with us. How's business?
Good. We're getting on good.
Flat out?
We're busy all the time.
What do you do down there? Obviously, CBM Science, it's signs, right?
We've got signs and number plates, big end of number plates, and vehicle graphics and shop fronts.
Yeah. And you were involved in wrapping, weren't you? Tiny's car?
Yeah,
do that all the time,
No, that's the kind of work we do all the time. We have a team there. We're doing that all the time. So all commercial vans and rally cars. Do a lot of rally cars, motorsport.
Yeah.
And rally cars all over the place. We've been all over.
Is it practical to wrap a private vehicle versus resprays, or does it need to be like sort of a commercial stroke sport type of thing?
It's better if it's commercial. If it's a straight colour swap, you can probably get them painted for the same money, but it's more commercial. You want to put your branding on it, your design or something, then you go wrapping.
Because otherwise you'd be painting it, and then you have to pay someone to come in.
It depends on the look you're going for, Greg.
Okay. Light Up Letterkenny is back for the fifth year. It's coming up this Sunday from 5 p.m. and this is a big event. It's spectacular in person, it's spectacular on social media. How did it come about? How are we at 5 years?
5 years, another year already, Greg. It doesn't seem like that since we were here last year. I suppose it started during COVID, during the lockdown. There was nothing happening. There's no pubs open. There was nothing. It kind of started as a once-off, but now we're here 5 years later. That's kind of one of the main fundraisers we have for charity every year now. So it's kind of starts off Christmas for everybody. It's part of the thing. You go and see Santa and you have the Christmas light run. And it's different in Letterkenny when it's in the town. I think there's something magical about seeing the big tractors and lorries going down the main street.
It's a different experience, isn't it?
It's different, and there's plenty of viewing areas. You know, people go take the kids. If you have young kids, you can go and watch it along the way, along the route. And if you can come down, walk through them, chat to people. It's a good social occasion for every age. You have young and old, first person there last year, I would say, is a man in his 70s, and then you have the 16-year-olds in the tractor that's mad to get going, mad to get in tires. So that's a good mix of people, and it's good, brings everybody out, and hopefully we get a good evening first.
And it's a good mix as well, too, of vehicles, because it's not just a tractor run. There's lots of vans there done up to the nines, yeah. Big trucks, the classic cars come out for winter play. Rally cars, as you mentioned, yeah. You probably wrapped most of them. Motorbikes as well. So it's all vehicles. And it's a great opportunity, isn't it, for these lads and lassies to get the vehicles out and doll them up in the middle of December.
Well, that's it. That's what we call a Christmas light run. We don't say tractor run necessarily, because there's that many different types of vehicles. And the intention to start was that we'd have more vans and commercial vehicles being in Letterkenny. But the first year the tractors landed, we're glad to see them. And as I say, it's great. I suppose you were speaking earlier about road victims and stuff, and the young people get a lot of bad press in Donegal, and suppose this is one of the good things they do. You know, they come out and support it, and you know, it's great to see them out in their pride and their cars and their tractors and different things like that.
Yeah, and I think it's part of the Christmas calendar now in terms of bringing joy and stuff as well, but it also is a very important fundraiser. You've raised 15 grand so far to various charities, and there's two brilliant charities going to benefit this year.
Yeah, we changed about a wee bit this year. We had the hospice for the first 5 years, and then the blood bikes came on last year. As you know yourself, Greg, you're dealing with so many great charities in the county, and the more times you experience them. Last year we got to know more about what the blood bikes done, and this year unfortunately we had to avail some of the services of Cancer West. So you know, they're all great charities, so we'll hopefully raise a few pounds from this year, and that's what it's all about, to be honest.
Yep. Now it is one of those events that, as I say, it's kind of locked itself into the calendar, and it's grown and grown in terms of participation, but also people spectating it as well. People love it for all the reasons we've talked about.
Funny, last year we had to change the route slightly. We used to always pull in here at the mountain top the first couple of years and have a Kiana regroup. And last year we couldn't, because that many people up watching it. Cosgrove's getting coffee, and the kids were all watching along the road. So we actually couldn't. We had to come back down again. So this year we're planning to do the same. We're just coming up here around the roundabout and coming back down again. And that gives everybody in the run too to see who else is in the run as well.
Because
often you're in these parades and different runs, you're in the middle of them. You don't see what's going on. You don't see who else is there. So
what is the route this year then, so people can pick their spot? And just to remind you, it is on Sunday, and it starts at 5 p.m. from where and to where?
Well, starts at 5 o'clock. We want to get all the vehicles on early at 5 o'clock. We'll hopefully get the run, the guards, you know, Sergeant Walsh there, and the Letterkenny guards is always very good to us, so we should start at about 6, depending on traffic.
Brilliant.
The run will start. So we'll leave CBM signs there on the Port Road, turn left, up by Tobin's, Donegal Oil, which is another two great places to watch it. And then we'll go up the Port Road and down the main street. Something great about passing the old courthouse there on the main street, some lovely photos. And then we'll go down around by the Station House Hotel and around Pierce Road by McDonald's, out the Blaney Road and around the Polestar. We'll come across in the front of the Mount Errigal, and we'll go up the Business Park Road then up towards the mountaintop here. So we'll go around the roundabout this year and come back down past the hospital. That was one of the things the first year we done it. All the people stuck in hospitals, they can come out and if they want to look at it. That's a wee bit of Christmas cheer for them when they're in their hospital. And we've had a nephew born there last week, so it's special. He's in there at the minute. So him and his mammy Megan will be there watching, I'm sure. So it's a wee bit special this year seeing it, and we'll come back down to CBM signs then.
Brilliant. It's a great route, and it's a simple event. I mean, obviously you can't go anywhere, but it catches the whole town, really, either on the route or just coming into the route.
Yeah, there's good viewing areas front of Mount Errigal on the mountaintop, as I said, and stuff, and there's good places. You know, if you have younger kids, you can come in. The Alamo Bin, that's where we brought it forward, kind of 6 o'clock, because you're in shopping. I know the Christmas shopping on a Sunday, so they can come in and they can get something to eat or get a bag of sweets and enjoy it, a cup of coffee. And
fantastic stuff. Right, so in terms of taking part, so as I say, if you've got anything that's obviously roadworthy and covered in terms of tax and insurance and all that type of stuff, driver's license would be very important indeed as well, for obvious reasons. Yeah. There's a bit of scrutiny of these things for good reason, and obviously the organisers don't want any hassle. But we're talking tractors, vans, trucks, classic cars, rally cars and motorbikes. They in themselves are a fantastic spectacle, but do we see them Christmassy?
They're all lights, they're coming. Some people put great effort on all kinds of different lights and different vehicles, vans and stuff, and some of the tractors, the wheels and stuff. The LED lights is great now, battery lights, you'll get the battery lights.
Isn't
anywhere.
That it? Yeah.
And town like John Watson down there is doing a special offer on Watson Hire and battery lights, if you mentioned their own. And different places, Cooney's there. There's so many shops around Letterkenny. You can get stuff. They don't need, the best thing about the Christmas light run is they don't necessarily need to be as clean as runs during the summer. So, you know, exactly, the dark hides a lot of sore points. So you can get them, you know, don't be worrying about them sparkling, get in and have a bit of crack. And as I say, it's all about meeting and it's all about seeing people, good catch up. We've people coming back, that's back from Australia to see it. There's people coming from Mayo up this weekend to see it. You know, it's part of the calendar now. It's like the Christmas lights switch on, and now the Christmas lights become part of the stable, part of the one of the events.
You mentioned some great businesses there. I heard Cooney's advertised with us here at Highland, and I went down. There's an upstairs there which I didn't realise, and it's Christmas in itself. Well worth a visit. I have to say, as well.
On a good show now.
I just hadn't been in there before, and I thought, wow, there's literally everything here, from massive neons to, you know, massive trees to small stuff, and wouldn't rob you either, which is good. Right, okay, so just to be sure, all vehicles need to be roadworthy, and the drivers must have the license relevant to the vehicle that they... And that might sound boring, but it's all for the right reasons to make sure it all passes off nice and
euro,
safe.
20 euro to enter, and that's all goes to charity.
That's it, okay.
And if they could have the 20 euro ready, it'd be great for us organising
Don't
for
land
change.
With your card and say, oh, you don't... come on, 20 quid cash, go to the bank on Friday.
Exactly, they've run out of change, we'll just keep the 50.
And you know what? If it's a 50, you don't have to break it, you can just leave that behind you.
Yeah, you can too.
Some of these boys have so much money, like...
Some
of the 150 grand tractors.
That's why they're poor. That's why the farmer's poor. Then they get all the money spent on the machinery. So we're glad to see everybody again this year.
Of course. And is the majority of the fundraising through the vehicle participation, or do you are the buckets as well?
Just bucket. Well, there's bucket collections in the way. It's like everything help. Usually it's just the vehicles, but there'll be bucket collectors around the area as well. If you want to pop on and give a donation, you're more than welcome. So there'll be collectors there in high vis, and you can see any of them.
Good stuff.
We'll take all donations.
And I will say too, if you don't mind, because I know it's true, you talked about working with Garda Sergeant Una Walsher and other Gardaí. It's done on a Sunday evening, and it's designed in a way to keep any disruption down to an absolute minimum, and actually to bring people into Letterkenny, not to...
Well, it's a mixture of both. A wee bit of noise, a wee bit of light side, but it's done enough safe.
But the point is manageable that way, helps Letterkenny, it doesn't take away from it. It's at a very good time, and as you say, people will come in and they'll spend a few bob as well, which is great. Okay, so you just land at CBM
Signs from
at
5 o'clock. Yeah, from 5.
And then you're in it then once you hand it over.
It's a bit of a social thing before it starts. People mixing and seeing each other.
Flexing.
Yeah, well, that's it too.
Are you driving anything?
The last couple of years I didn't. I might drive this year. We're usually organised. I probably have a tractor. I'll say tractor or van here. We haven't really organised yet.
You always seem to get there.
We'll always get there.
Brilliant. Listen, it's a fantastic initiative. Well done. Thanks so much for calling in. And get out and enjoy. It's this Sunday, and it's the fifth incarnation of this event that's going from strength to strength. Charities benefiting this year are Blood Blikes Northwest. These guys and girls, I say guys, they do amazing stuff, transporting blood around and breast milk as well for babies.
Medical devices. They do so much other stuff than blood. It's not until you
They all kind of interact with each other. So you could have, say, for instance, you could have breast milk coming from one hospital. I'm just using that as an example because we always talk about the blood, but it could be the blood or whatever it is, or you know, you'll have one person heading from one part and another to the other. They meet and then they get it back up, and these are all doing it, you know.
Volunteers.
You know, they're volunteering and what have you. It's astonishing what they do, and the reason why it's great to see Blood Bikes Northwest getting another mention again, it's one of those charities that unless we talk about it, you only know about it when you've needed them.
Yeah,
exactly. And we know the fantastic work that Cancer Care West does in Letterkenny. Anyone who's accessed those services will know exactly what we're talking about there. So no excuses now, folks. Get your tractor out. Get your vans, trucks, classic cars, rallies, your motorbikes, your road legal quads, whatever it might be. But everything has to be road legal, of course, in terms of its roadworthiness, tax insurance and your license. But I did say that you've got great cooperation from the Gardaí and the businesses as well. Absolutely. If you're going to enter it, it's at 5. If you want to watch it, it's from 6. Do you have up on your Facebook page a rough guesstimate?
We'll probably do a few photos and a few Facebook lives. Jimmy Stafford's joining us as he does every year. So Jimmy will be Facebook live.
What does he do?
Well, Sir Jimmy's Mr. Facebook. Sure, yeah, he's Facebook Live that, all the time. Sure, he's so. Keeping everybody up to date. Sure, he's great to have about. So, okay. And enthusiasm. So, Jimmy's joining us. I'm sure if anybody follows Jimmy on them, he'll be keeping everybody up to date.
Brilliant. Okay. And you know what? There'll be pictures all over the place as well, too. But yeah, Jimmy does great work.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for calling up, Bernard. Continued success down at the business, too. It's a fantastic, fantastic initiative. Look after yourself. That's Bernard Gallagher of CBM Signs this Sunday. Gather at 5 p.m. at CBM Signs if you're taking part, and just get yourself out onto the route as mentioned there if you want to see this wonderful spectacular that has now become a part of the Christmas Letterkenny calendar.